You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name is Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News, and today, the last day you're listening to a podcast before Summer League has started, so it's the last chance to cover all the free agency stuff before it gets caught up with Benedict Mathurin mania in Pacerland. And who better to talk about all this free agency stuff with than a man that I am preventing from going to bed before he has to fly to Vegas super early in the morning, and someone I've seen a million times in the past 7 days, Scott Agnes. Scott, have you enjoyed this time of year? Are you excited for Vegas? How are you doing these days?
Hey, Tony. Yeah, unlike we've seen each other, it feels like daily for the last month. You're probably going to be happy you don't need to see me for another 10 days or something, at least, barring some kind of announcement or something here. But I'm all right. I'm exhausted. Like, it feels like we went, and this is a real problem, I think, in the NBA right now, to an extent, is that there's no spacing between the periods. So you go from the finals to the draft, right to free agency. And then I think about the agents in this aspect. You got agents that are pushing their clients for the draft while negotiating finger quotes extensions, but not before the deadline, obviously. Then July 1, you're doing your draft picks, maybe your second round picks, all while trying to get undrafted guys placed. Like, I don't think anybody's great this time of year. You see what I'm saying there? There's just so much. And I'm like, can we spread it out a little bit? Maybe it's the victim of an 82-game schedule.
Yeah, I agree. And on the media side, I know you've thought about this. Like, Benedict Mathurin deserved like a week plus of coverage. Like,
yes,
the third Pacers pick in years. And we can do like 2 days. And then it's like, all right, free agency, what are they going to do? So that's another part of it that's really hard, is trying to fit it into that tight window. And I'm going to kind of use him as a segue into the first topic I wanted. I'll get to that one later, actually. Let's just start with your impressions of this offseason. Mathurin's in the door. They get Jalen Smith back. Those are the highlight additions or signings. The Brogdon trade is the biggest move. What have you kind of thought of everything they've done big picture so far?
I think so far I would say it's gone to script except for the Jalen Smith thing. I'd lie if I said this is exactly how I thought it was going to go, just with his contract situation and how much I guess he valued playing for Rick Carlisle, getting a guarantee of power forward. And that's probably a conversation maybe down the road. And how he was promised that. And then I also liked the way in which his contract was shaped, both for him and the team. So that one was a little bit surprising, admittedly. The rest, yes, it was a no-brainer and predicted for months. It was obvious, right, to all of us. Malcolm was on his way out, probably as easily as February when Tyrese Haliburton came here. Mathurin, pretty darn obvious. I think Nembhard was pretty obvious. Kendall Brown, not really. He didn't come through. And on draft night, he was like, yeah, I actually had a Zoom with him last night. I go, oh, okay. Yeah, so it was clear there was significant interest in him. And I always laugh, though, when team executive, oh, that's our guy. Or I think Kevin said, yeah, we got three top 20 picks. No, you didn't. You got one. But I'm not sure all three of those guys were in their board. And that's something, and being around the league more and more for years, as you have as well, is you get to understand kind of the pitfalls and the lingo and some of the stuff. It's like, all right, not every time did your guy always slip to you. It just doesn't always happen that way.
I was DMing with someone that I think that's my favorite offseason colloquialism is, we had this guy in our first round, and then they signed him to a two-way deal. I'm like, wait, you just said he was a first-round pick. Why are you putting him in the G League? So I get why they say that stuff and why it is.
I think I'll add Muscle Watch to mine, personally. That's one of my favorites. What have you been doing this offseason? Oh, you've trimmed down 7 pounds. Oh, I think Isaiah Jackson a couple days ago was talking about, I want to say he added 7 pounds maybe. Was about where he wanted, was adding a little more.
That was Terry, right?
So, yeah, you're right. Cause I was like, Terry, you look kind of big.
Yeah.
You look kind of big, man. He's like, no, not really, but thank you. So,
I think it's been, I agree with you that it's been a mostly as scripted offseason. And the reason I think it's so interesting, especially that they get Jalen back, is, and this number could change. I don't think their team is fully settled yet. They have 12 guys of the projected 17. If you include the 2As that are 25 or younger, right? Like, that is the direction the Pacers are headed. And I think we all knew that. So the fact that they were able to pull off the moves they were and still have now three first-round picks heading into next year, like, their direction is set now. You know, the boat is not turning or whatever Kevin Pritchard alluded to a million times.
Redirection, Tony.
The redirection. They have a direction now. There's no more, we can do this or this. Or, you know, what are they doing? They are young, and they're going to get this core growing together, led by Tyrese Haliburton and Benedict Mathurin. And I think that accomplishing those goals via getting Smith back, via the Brogdon trade, via anything else they may do. And I think when you think about stuff they could do, like think of the guys who are older than 25 as a starting point, you know, that is what's been maybe not impressive is not the right word, but just like to get it all on the same page and deals that make sense and have a young team. It's very un-Pacers-y. I think that's a good choice of direction. And that's why I've been, you know, kind of impressed by what they've done this summer.
And I think best of all, it seems like they're not necessarily waffling on that idea anymore. Starting with the day after the draft, I think that's when they made it clear, hey, it basically speaking to fans, it felt like Kevin Pritchard was saying, hey, look, you guys got to be patient a little bit. We're going young. We're going with these guys. We got a lot of draft picks. It's an exciting time to be a Pacer fan, but also, yeah, we'll see. So be patient with it. I thought that was kind of the first time I remember him going on the record about how they feel and where they're going moving forward. And that's, it's a stark contrast because you do not hire Rick Carlisle 1 year ago for a rebuild. And, you know, I'm not sure Rick would, you know, Rick wouldn't take this job as a rebuild. Why would you at his age and in a quest to win another title to validate maybe your first one a little bit?
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's funny because at first they were trying to say not a rebuild and avoid the word, but now they've really leaned into that.
It was reshaping, wasn't it?
Yeah, retooling and reshaping were the original words, I think. But it all made sense. They leaned into the correct thing. So this is kind of broad strokes way of discussing this, but I remember back, maybe it was early June, people were talking about this being the biggest offseason ever for the Pacers. Mm-hmm. Offseason, full word offseason. Biggest draft, I was there for that. Biggest offseason, I wasn't quite there. But in general, when it's you think of it in that context, you feel like they've nailed it in a way that is meeting that headline. Biggest offseason in Pacers history. Have they done it successfully to you under that guise?
I still give it an incomplete grade because mostly because we don't know exactly their direction with the Boston guys. Yeah. Seems like Aaron Nesmith's a part of that. Maybe Daniel Tice, at least through the trade deadline, but they don't have clarity on that situation either. I hope to get that and more, for example, here coming up in Vegas. And then the other three guys are kind of wild cards. Maybe you keep one of them, maybe Juwan Morgan to play the four, depending on what your roster numbers look like. They're a little thin at 3 and 4 relatively. Especially if you're truly playing Jalen Smith at a five, which it sounds like they're not going to as much, which is interesting call. But I was one of them. I'll admit, I was one of them saying this is probably something like this, the most important offseason in decades. I still feel that way because this was a reset. And you had to decide, first of all, if you are hitting the reset button, for example, you could argue, I think, that maybe fine-tuning the roster in the 2000s, or very early, right? Making a couple late trades that got you to the 2000 finals. I feel like a lot of that was just continuity and adding a piece or two, whereas this was, you have to nail a draft pick, and that we won't know for 3 years. It seems great, absolutely. No one's going to argue that. I love Mathurin, but let's give that 3 years. You moved on from Brogdon, needed to do that. Miles, I didn't expect to be moved. He has not yet. We'll see. You would like to know a little bit more about, I think how you look at it is if he's still on the roster going into the season, Tony, is you play it out and it's probably better into the hands of the Pacers that he does not, that he struggles out of the gates a little bit and that you could lower his price. However, then the Minnesota-Utah deal happened. And so that kind of changed my thinking a little bit about surely you could get two first round picks for him. Surely. Caris LeVert's worth one. Malcolm's worth one. Miles is at least worth two, I think.
Yeah, that I talked about that on the show after it happened. Like,
okay,
seeing a defensive anchor like that go for that much. I mean, the Pacers probably had to be like, yes, thank you, Minnesota. Thank you so much. They sent him a gift basket after that because that was quite the price, but that had to be so helpful for them in any negotiations. And now, you know, it's been reported for forever. I think you've even said it too, that their price for Turner, or at least their asking price, is high. And now they have a ton of ground to stand on to continue to negotiate in that way.
Yeah. For me, yeah, and by the way, I got clarity even again, or not even clarity, more confirmation last night in talking to one person. It's like, look, yeah, what's out there from national reports? Not right. What you keep saying is correct. So I don't have any reason not to believe this person. So, and that is that they're not shopping Miles. He is available, but it's got to be at a price they are comfortable with.
And he's 26. Like I talk about the 25 and under rule. Okay, he's 26. Right. Whatever. It's like it's right there. It doesn't really matter. And sure, they'll probably have to sniff around what his value is at the trade deadline because he might be expiring when the season starts. But deal with that then. You know, see what he fits with your team. I mean, what is the fault in that? What is the downside risk of that? Besides a few minutes maybe for like your third center. So yeah, the importantness of the offseason, I thought for sure most important draft in decades. And I love the Mathurin pick. And to me, when I think of like the most important, it's like I thought 2018 was really important because they were clearly they were the fifth seed. They were one game away from taking down LeBron and they had like 20 something million in cap space that summer. Mm-hmm. That is important. You can jump to like a finals contending team. And I love the Tyreke Evans signing when they did it, and I was an idiot and was wrong. But that is like an important offseason to me. When you have
I haven't heard his name in about 3 months since he was doing tryouts for NBA teams in Miami.
I don't think anyone thought they would hear Tyreke Evans on.
Hold on. By the way, we're like 20 minutes into this, and we didn't celebrate the landmark. Monte Ellis, goodbye.
That's right. Off the books. I tweeted right
finally, well. 7 years later.
I had the draft ready. I think I had that draft in my tweets for like 5 months.
Did you? Yeah.
I got to delete a row from the table in the Excel sheet. It was a good day.
That was a good day in that front. And yes, there's nothing they did or, you know, decision-wise this summer, but that's yet another reason, another checkbox of, okay, that's positive, frees up, what, $2.25 million. But more than that, it's just another guy off the books and cleans things up even more. So
that's a minimum salary like that's a free player, basically.
I mean, some might say that's Lance.
Essentially, yes. So I do think there were a lot of important parts of this offseason. Resetting, which is something they never do. I mean, that's hard to do. That's important. So in the context of resetting,
and that's why I said it was so important, though,
right?
Because it's something they didn't do. They needed to clarify their situation and draft well, and one's to be determined.
Hey, you guys, want to take one short little break here to talk to you about Truebill. Do you know why free trials renew without your consent? It's a business scam out to get you. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money anymore. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 per year with Truebill because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel. Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link up your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions. So you don't have to. They have over 2 million users and have helped them save over $100 million. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now, Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Yeah, being willing to pull the plug, super important, and they did it. It's hard to do that. It's hard to convince your ownership to do that. To be able to do it is a big success to me. Let's talk about Mathurin for a second, because this team is really interesting to me in terms of like they have a lot of guys who are like 2 and 3. Not that it really matters which one they play, but they just have a lot of guys in that mold, and Mathurin is one of them. How do you feel like he'll slide in on this team? I think he's starter day one for sure. And how do you think they'll try to maximize him with Duarte and Haliburton and other guards in the mix to start this season?
Yeah, it seems that I don't know why you wouldn't start Mathurin. You'd go all in on him from the beginning, especially when you're rebuilding here. No reason to, like, I don't know, make him earn it, quote unquote. I mean, you started Duarte the first, I want to say, like 7 games. And then I actually liked him better off the bench. And I think moving forward, ideally, if he's your sixth man, then I really like how things are coming across. So to me, I think at this juncture, I see, we know Haliburton, we know Jalen Smith, we presume Miles Turner at this point. So I see it as Buddy Hield and Benedict Mathurin with those starting spots. And then that second unit's really interesting with McConnell, with probably Dwayne Washington Jr., with Duarte, O'Shea Brissett, obviously, and Isaiah Jackson. And to some extent, I like the fact how O'Shea can really run and get that team going. Dwayne can be in the corner. TJ will move the ball up, so I kind of like the fit as well with those early estimates on that second unit.
I get what you're saying about them starting or not starting together. Just in terms of the future of the team, I would love to just see like 10 trillion minutes of Duarte, Haliburton, Mathurin. Just slap him out there. If it sucks, that's fine. Like, let him go through it. Even if Duarte will eventually come off the bench. Because I think that's, like, is Buddy Hield really a future of this franchise kind of guy? I think he fits really, ironically, he fits very well with the way they play. And they haven't had a shooter like him. I mean, McDermott was pretty good. But they haven't had a shooter like him, like, ever. So I understand him starting. I think that makes a lot of sense, having spacing around the young guys. But I just want to see all the minutes of the young trio be try to be the three-headed monster to the extent that they can. But that's a good point about Dwayne with the second unit and a bunch of juice. That's going to be an all-energy lineup.
That's what I'm saying. And by the way, I ignored Terry Taylor. He's very much in that conversation as well, but probably more like the 10th, 11th man, I would guess right now. But again, we didn't even factor in a Daniel Tice and Aaron Nesmith and another move or two they could make. Right now, it's hilarious, though. They have a huge 19-man roster when you factor in those Boston guys and put them, as I'm sure you have on your Excel spreadsheet over there.
Yeah, I got a little ahead of myself and I made that, and now I have to keep like going back and being like, oh, yeah, this trade is officially at where they're at right now. It's all very confusing. I should have.
By the way, you want to know an interesting thought I had last night? As Miles Turner, he's headed to Tanzania with Malcolm Brogdon. I wonder about this, and this is something I'm going to check into. I assume Malcolm already took a physical to get that done so the trade could be completed, but he's scheduled to be in Tanzania with Miles Turner here in the next day or so.
And Miles already was on a flight per Instagram, so I think, I mean, it's a long flight, but yeah, they'll be together soon. I'm sure they'll have some interesting conversations in the coming
days. Can you imagine that? Yeah.
So to tie this to the Fever for a second, I mean, Daniel Robinson and Tierra McCowan were on the same team in Turkey The Fever traded Tierra McCowan this offseason. That's like, you know, how do you talk about that as teammates that day? They play together for the next month and then they're just split up. It had to be so fascinating. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Turner and Brogdon and that move. What did you think of the Brogdon trade? Because, you know, there was some reporting about Washington and New York throwing picks 10 and 11 for him, which I didn't think it doesn't matter what I thought. I did not think he could fetch that much value. But some people were, you know, late 20s pick from the Celtics and Nesmith questioning the value. What did you think of that deal? And how much value do you think people are missing, one, in clearing money, and two, in it was just time to move on from a guy like that has value to an organization as well?
Yeah, and I think that latter point's the number one thing, but obviously you're not just giving him away. I thought honestly he would fetch a mid to late first round pick. And I think a lot of that's, quite frankly, going off of Caris LeVert. He roughly fetched to 20 to 22. And I thought Malcolm probably had slightly more value, considering, yes, both are injured. And by the way, I've talked about how one of the offseason things the Pacers have done a good job of is clearing away the guys that they just don't have durability. They cannot count on. We know Malcolm. We know TJ Warren. We should extend that, I think, to Caris back at the trade deadline as well. Yep. No one's discounting his game in many respects, but you just he just had several things pile up one after the other here. And so that's another positive step for this team over the last 6 months. So I did like that. I think it was really interesting. I agree, Tony, that right at the trade deadline, it's really, I'm sure you're this way as well. It's interesting to hear when the Pacers are talked about in the national conversation and things are reported about them, because it doesn't happen very often. And so you consider, why is this getting out there? What's the angle here? Are the Pacers actually projecting this, or is this an agent trying to weasel a deal here? Or is it the other team trying to drive up value? But on this end, there would be no reason to hype up that, you know, the Wizards or the Knicks could trade up from 10 or 11, while it would make sense. And I know the Pacers would have jumped on that in a minute. My only issue, and to bringing it back to the bigger part of this Boston deal, is I thought it should have been a little more. Cause right now, I mean, you can probably project that Boston pick 25 to 30. Tice, you might be able to turn into some value. I'm not exactly sure right now. So maybe you add that as well. And then it's also a very cheap gamble on another draft pick, another lottery pick, actually, from 2 years ago. So when you factor all of that in, all right, maybe it's a more complete picture, but also you got to pay those bottom three guys to go away, which, I mean, you probably have it, but I think it's $4.5 million, maybe, on all three of those guys.
It sits like almost $5.5 million. It's quite a bit because
okay, yeah.
one of them, Stauskas, is over $2 million because he's been in the league for a long time. So it's a lot, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know what'll happen with those guys. I don't really think they're too much in the Pacers' future plans. Not that they matter to this context. Part of this trade makes me think they're a little higher on Nesmith than you or I maybe are, just because he can shoot. Was projected to shoot and can play on the wing, and they need more of those guys, but. The optimist's take would be, do you remember this game? You were definitely there. They played the Celtics in early January. It was halfway through the season. The Celtics were 20-20, right? Like, they obviously surged a ton, but they were not without warts last year. Perhaps they do not end up being amazing next year. They also have Malcolm Brogdon now, so maybe they will be amazing. And they were also super healthy. So, like, the optimist's take would be, maybe their luck evens out a little bit, and they're, like, the five seed, and it's the 22nd pick. Great. Or they're high on Nesmith. But yeah, I thought that maybe they could get a little more as well. Not that I just think there was a lot of value in not having Malcolm Brogdon on the Pacers anymore, given what their goals are and given where their team is headed at this stage.
I would agree with that. You got the redundancy. You got how he took away minutes, but more also, I don't think this is necessarily it, but the confidence or the assuredness maybe of Tyrese when they tried to play together. That experience had to end. Just like the Turner and Sabonis experiment needed to be nailed in the coffin and moved on from.
One more break here, guys, so I could talk to you about betonline.net, who is your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including the ongoing Major League Baseball season, all over at betonline.net. And they are your continued source for all of your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, scores, everything you need. They've got it on there. Speaking of betting, they have lines for the NFL Week 1 up there. You can bet on the Colts versus the Texans in September. See Matt Ryan's first game against Houston in Houston. We'll see what happens there. I believe the spread is 8.5 for that one. And betonline.net remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. They're the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in the action. BetOnline is where the game starts. Are you ready for fans to make a new nickname like Turbonus for Turner and Smith?
I am not. No, I think that might be a little bit premature here. I would think the first thing might be something with Halliburton, Mathurin.
Yeah.
That would make the most sense.
I just was thinking from the too big perspective. It went away for 3 months and it's already back on day one of the season. Broad question here, Scott.
And that's interesting too, right? It's like if you're Miles, you're like, all right, I thought we were done with this. And because he hasn't even played without Sabonis not on the roster in years. So he doesn't know what that's like. So if I'm Miles on that 14-hour plane ride on my way to Tanzania, that's one thing I'm thinking about. I'm like, really, guys? Like, can you get me a real power forward, a rebounding guy? I'll handle the rim. He can defend and be a versatile defender. Yeah, that was another thing that came to mind a couple days ago with that trade.
I zoomed out as broad as you can answer questions, Scott.
Okay.
Any moves left for this team? Do you feel like they need anything else?
I think they could always use help on the wing, and I've said that for several years now. I still don't feel completely comfortable with where they're at right there. Like, Kendall Brown, still very raw. Obviously, first-year guy, will make a ton of mistakes. You got that. You could, again, your kind of hybrids you have in Buddy Hield and Mathurin, probably not Dorte at the three, but that's an issue. Into a broader conversation, too, is defense. Did they really address any of that here? And to that point as well, is if Miles Turner's on his way out, then really how do you feel about this? Is it still a bottom five, bottom seven defense? I don't see any reason it's not. So those things concern me.
If Miles is out, it's a bottom two, three defense. Like it will be rough with the youngsters they have and the weaknesses they had last year. I agree with the wings. Like, when I built a fake rotation, I'm like, sneaking in as much, Jalen Smith, Aaron Nesmith in the forward spots as I can, just to see what this even looks like, because they don't have a lot of guys who are naturally forward. So Shea Brissett naturally is a forward. He's kind of like the only one. Like, Duarte is kind of a guard forward. Smith's a big, like, I guess Terry Taylor, but he played center a lot last year, and Kendall Brown, but they are really light in that spot. The reason I think maybe something small, like really small, is coming, like Tice into a trade exception, or Tice for like some other weirdo contract, is because If they want to sign Kendall Brown to a standard deal, they have 16 guys and you can only have 15 guys, right? So like maybe some little tiny thing is coming and maybe it includes some of those Celtics guys. I don't know, but I feel like they could be settled now just given that they have basically a roster and they have their Exhibit 10 guys already at least all locked up internally as well.
Yeah, and so far they have not signed, by the way. It's notable, this either one of the second round picks. We saw Mathurin sign earlier this week, but have not seen Kendall Brown nor Andrew Nembhard going into Summer League here with the recording. And normally, for you know, most fans aren't following this probably. This is already done. It's usually done the end of June, 1st of July. They get it done. They're practicing, but it's not. So you know there's more in the cards here.
Yeah, part of it is just roster spots since they're about to do a 1-for-5 trade. So they have to order these operations very well. But like if Kendall Brown was getting a two-way, they could have done that 6 days ago, you know, right when they signed Mathurin. Like Dwayne Washington signed July 1 a year ago to his two-way. You can do those really quick. So it's always been telling to me or like something like nagging me in the head, like, hey, they haven't done this stuff yet. You know, they have to deal with all these roster spots and think about what their team will look like going forward. Minor one, because you reported on it, Dwayne Washington's contract. Yeah. Any insight on why that date got pushed back? Because, you know, with Keelan Martin last year, the reason he agreed to do it is they were going to cut him. And then Ed got hurt in between the date that he was going to get cut, and it got pushed back, and they needed him, and he kept a spot. But on this one, I'm a little more lost as to what Dwayne Washington stands to gain from this. And so because it's a team player agreement, I was wondering if you want to talk about that insight at all, if you had any here.
Yeah, and with Keelan, if you remember, I think it was like three times ultimately.
Yeah, yes.
Because the first time was at Summer League. The second time might have been at Summer League as well. And then the third time was during camp or early. No, it was early September, like you said, after Edmund Sumner's thing went down on September 9th. Dwayne Washington Jr., I was a little bit surprised by this as well. Mainly because he's part of their plans. He's part of their future. So what teams will do in this situation is you guarantee them significant portion of this money. So right. It's not much loss. Like he's probably sitting there and let's say it was 1.6 roughly. Maybe they guaranteed him 700,000 or 800,000 just for this. So he knows he might get cut. Probably not, unlikely. And they probably have some kind of agreement here. I don't know that. There's a chance he could make more money out of the deal. That's why for Keelan, it made a lot of sense because he was able to make more money than just getting cut and probably going overseas like he had intended here. But that remains to be seen. And I think maybe we'll get more clarity on that here in the coming days.
Yeah. Usually the reason the player agrees is because the team can strong arm them and be like, we're going to cut you unless you say yes. So they do it. But I don't think they were going to cut Dwayne, you know, based on you have been to the Summer League.
Not practice. At all.
Like, he's the leader of that Summer League team. He was good on offense last year. Like, I would have been stunned.
He's
stunned
playing Summer League, or at least he's been in practices. Now, and this is the other next thing is like, does he play in Summer League until this is resolved?
Right.
I'm not sure I would unless they have some kind of minor agreement. That's what I'll figure out here.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe he did get a guarantee as a part of that. And, you know, if he's in a trade, like, I guess maybe part of his salary would have to be guaranteed, like all these Celtics guys. And so they said, hey, maybe you're in a trade and you'll get all your money anyway. I can't think of a reason.
They like Dwayne. They're not, I can't see any way they're trading him just to, like, make it work with a contract.
It's just strange that it's 9 days, too. Like, what's going to happen in the 9 days? So we'll see. Maybe there's something that I'm missing.
We'll learn more about Terry Taylor's deal here, too, in 3 days, I think. 2 days.
Yeah, 2 days. Yep. On Sunday for him. Last thing, Scott, I have to talk about it because everybody except for me, apparently, wants to talk about this. It's very uninteresting to me.
Okay.
DeAndre Ayton is not on a team yet. So what people keep saying or trying to say, actually, I keep hearing two things. I'm going to shoot down the first one right away. The Pacers can sign Ayton to a max offer sheet after the Brogdon trade. No, they cannot. They will not have max salary cap space after the Brogdon trade. That is just false. So if you say that, please show your work because you are incorrect. Thing two people are saying is the Pacers could trade Miles Turner to the Suns for DeAndre Ayton. I get why the Suns would love that. They get a player for a guy that they weren't going to match at the max. If you're the Pacers, you can get to max cap space pretty easily without trading Miles Turner. Why would you trade Miles Turner when you don't have to do it? That's always been my stance on this. Not that Ayton isn't good. He is good and young. But I don't get the way it's talked about or reported at all. They don't make sense for the Pacers. He does. The reporting doesn't at all. Do you think there's anything to this? I mean, I guess because he's young and good, like I would get it. But it just it doesn't jive with the Pacers, I mean, they did, I guess, do the sign and trade for Brogdon when they didn't have to in restricted free agency, but it just doesn't make sense to me necessarily.
For one, I think the team's attitude has changed a little bit towards free agency. I remember, I don't know if it was Larry or some of the executives, and this is even on the record. It was like, yeah, we're not going after restricted free agents. We don't believe in that. It's their player. We're not trying to steal guys away. But that clearly mentality has shifted, but not without giving something away. If you remember that Malcolm Brogdon deal, Herb Simon jumped in late and was like, we believe you should get compensated a first round pick as well, rather than just 2 second round picks. And so also to go back to that Boston deal, I think it was important to at least get that first round pick back to kind of, you know, break even, if you will, from that type of deal. I think there's so with DeAndre Ayton, I don't think anything's imminent. And that just means in general for DeAndre Ayton. I think the Pacers have definitely looked into him. I think they're definitely interested. And a lot, most of it just makes clear sense. Like former number one pick, a lot of talent, young player. Guess what? The Pacers have never gotten free agency. That, like, lottery pick, a guy to willingly sign with him. And so they could offer him, much like Jalen Smith, a real opportunity, I think, here to grow and build together, be on the foundation. I think there's something very fun and cool about that as well. He'll care about getting paid. And it sounds like Phoenix is very reserved and not feeling comfortable about doing that whatsoever. So will he even be brought back? So the tricky part about it is, I think if you remove Miles from the situation, it makes a lot more sense. But because they have Miles, it's a little wishy-washy. But DeAndre, I think he's 23. He's just going into this. This would be his second contract. And so there's a lot of reasons I think it's smart for the Pacers to look into this. And I agree. I think the more likely way for it to be done would just be to sign into an offer sheet and dare Phoenix, who's in the middle of some chaos right now, to, you know, match that offer sheet. Because usually that doesn't happen as often as you'd think.
Right. And that's what I think, too. Like, why would you trade Miles Turner for Ayton when you could trade Tyson a second rounder into some poor team's trade exception and then just sign him? Like, that's less value to give up to do the same thing. That's why none of this makes sense to me.
And if you wanted to move Miles, you could pick up at least a pick or two, hope. So.
Right. That's why none of this makes sense to me. I get why they would want Ayton. You know, then they'd have just sign the entire 2020 draft at that point. But, you know, I get why they'd want Ayton. They inquired about him in February. I think you reported that.
They did. Absolutely. Because what I was told in that, it was they talked with them, but it was entirely about Miles. It was not about Sabonis. The only reason Sabonis was traded was because Halliburton was made available. But the Pacers, absolutely. I was told to look out for this. This could happen, you know, whatever it was, in 2 days or whatever. That was back at the trade deadline. And then several other things happened.
Yeah, that would have been nuts if it was Miles. I mean, that would have,
it was just Phoenix. I don't know why, but Phoenix was like, hey, you know what? Let's run it back, see if we can get back to the finals. And I know it's funny to consider what ifs, and the great one seems to be, what if they pick Tyrese Halliburton instead of Jalen Smith in 2020? Can you imagine how much better and how much, you know, Chris Paul would really appreciate having that, not have to play 42 minutes and not get injured late in a playoff series? That's one they'd like to have back, and probably Ayton as well. Those are probably two of their biggest mistakes. You could have had, what, Luka? You could have had Trae Young. I'm probably forgetting someone right there as well.
Luka not going number one was just unbelievable. So I get why they would sign Ayton. He's talented and young, but the way everybody's talking about it makes no sense. I think you agree on that. Mm-hmm. Scott, I've held you way over the time. You have to fly super soon. So get out of here. I know everybody who's listening knows who you are, but where can the few who don't find your work and everything you put out about the Indiana Pacers?
Yeah, appreciate it, Tony. Always good to join you. Just check me out at Field. That sounds weird. Check me out. Just head over to Fieldhouse. There's a new teaser for you. Just over at Fieldhouse. It's too late for my time right now. Fieldhousefiles.com, Fieldhouse Files podcast. You guys know the rest.
Highly recommend. Great work from Scott every day covering team through free agency. And he'll be in Vegas to cover the summer Pacers. And that will be something I'm unable to do since I will not be able to be there. So Scott is your source for all that information. This show is on Twitter @LockedOnPacers and me @TEastNBA. Thanks everybody for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.